MGP listeners. This week's episode is about 2023 golf goals. You know, before you start the year, you got to figure out, what am I going to be working on this year? What am I going to be doing this summer? Come next year, I want to be better. So this year, I got to have some goals to set in place. We talk about ours, throw some ideas out there. Would love to hear from you all what you think. We also have a sponsored shout out from our friends at Bridges to Learning. They're a Minneapolis nonprofit. They give the wonderful gift of education to hundreds of young students in Vietnam every year. They've got their annual charity golf event Thursday, June 1st, and it's at the Wilds in Prior Lake at 12 o'clock. They're offering listeners of MGP two free tickets, $300 value, includes a free round of golf, barbecue, access to a bunch of games, raffle tickets with a lot of free gifts. And to win, all you got to do is share the link. We're going to have it in our notes, description, all that fun stuff, to the event on any of your social media accounts, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Insta, whatever you prefer. Winners are going to be announced and contacted Friday, May 26th. So good luck. I'm going to be putting into it with my buddy Sam. You know, they're providing education for folks, and I mean, unlike America, Vietnam, it's privatized, it's not free. So a ton of costs associated with that, and I just want to support our friends over at Bridges to Learning. So enter into that. Thank you for being a MGP listener, and without further ado, 2023 golf goals with the squad.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Member Guest Podcast. It's been a little while since we've sat down here in the studio and all had the chance to connect. Got a great episode for you tonight. 75 and sunny here in Minnesota. Golf season is feeling like it is knocking on the door. The snow is thawing. The birds are chirping. The boys are buzzing.
That's the weather.
And we're excited to get going. Probably release this episode in a couple of weeks here. Would be remiss if we did not mention the Masters, which just wrapped up on Sunday. John Rahm is your winner, ladies and gentlemen. Pretty amazing performance from John Rahm. Spotted the field, a four putt on the first hole. Had the worst draw of the week of pretty much anybody and won by four shots. So, and I think he three putted like three or four times. So
he's a beast. That's the only way to put it. It was kind of fun. I had someone in the office the other day who was just down at Silverleaf, and it was just the week before the Masters. And they were like, yeah, we got there in the morning. He was out on the range hitting balls. We went out, played, came back. He was still hitting balls. Went, had some food, had some drinks, came back. He was still hitting balls. Yeah. And it was nails every time. So
Did you see that he still keeps his handicap for his money games at Whisper?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so he like logs all of his rounds in there because he has to keep it for his cash games.
Did you see what it was?
No.
Plus 9.6.
Wow. Those were missing his rounds at Augusta.
Yeah.
That's silly.
That's unbelievable.
That's silly.
Well, one of the topics of a conversation that's been live in the MGP text thread has been a little bit about the famed Masters dinner. And we thought tonight would be a good little tangent to talk about the member guests' optimal or ideal Masters dinner. I think we'll see some paella from Rahm possibly next year in honor of Spain. Why don't we start, boys, with the finger foods? I think we start up top with appetizers. I was actually gandering at all of the old Masters champion menus, which was actually a pretty fun exercise. Some of them were cool. Hideki's was really cool, obviously being from Japan and some of the directions you could go there. Some of them were horrendous.
What was the most unexpected food item you saw?
I wouldn't say unexpected. I think Zach Johnson's was like Florida shrimp and Iowa beef.
just a random combo.
It was just a simple menu. Bubba Watson had by far the worst menu of all time. He served grilled chicken as his entree. Which, I mean, come on, Matt, grilled chicken, like, really? Come on now, that's just not very good. So I think we'll do a little around the horn here and lob out some ideas. Going with the finger food section here, critical juncture, in my view, I'm a big finger food guy. I think, you know, anything slider, I'm into, to be honest with you. Anything on a skewer, I'm into. One of the ideas here that I had to go,
like a teriyaki chicken skewer.
Yeah. Like big skewer guy.
Kind of like grilled chicken.
Have you guys ever had though, caviar?
Yeah. Just try I'm it. Not a caviar guy though.
You're not a caviar guy. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what if we went with like some A5 Wagyu beef bites?
Okay.
I'm all in on that.
Like Japanese A5 Wagyu. I'm
on a skewer. Okay. So that's in for our first finger food of the day.
That's A5. A finger food though?
I think it's it's really rich.
It's master's dinner, so we can make it a finger food.
I will say this, on a trip to Japan in the Tsukiji fish market, I have had Wagyu on a stick. Mm. It's unreal.
So we're going snow Wagyu on a stick. As our kind of first bite, Jordan, what are you feeling here in the finger food category?
I'm like, when it comes to, I'm a really big, I would never do this for a master's dinner, but I am like a big dips guy. So when I think about, you know, veggie dips or chips and dip, my personal favorite dip is, buffalo, chicken dip. I don't know how I would incorporate that into like an appetizer for a master's dinner menu. I mean, maybe you could do some kind of buffalo chicken dip.
You could do like a buffalo chicken flatbread.
I could do that. I don't really want to ruin it though with the...
Yeah, like A5 and...
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would need some kind of dip along in there. So.
Okay.
I feel like we've set the stage with the A5 Wagyu.
That's really hard.
Like, yeah, we set it high.
We can't go to buffalo chicken flatbread.
You got to go some type of seafood. I mean, you could go oysters. I don't know if you guys like oysters.
If I went seago, I'd go like finger like nigiri.
Okay.
So I'd put some.
Really like
put
that.
Some
we're going Japanese.
We're going, we're Hideki.
Oh, we're doing surf and turf
like
appetizers.
Some ahi tuna.
No. Otoro tuna, okay. The fattiest of tuna.
Love it.
And sake nigiri, which would be salmon. Fatty salmon. So I would do those two nigiris, and that would pair marvelous.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm Japanese A5 Wagyu skewer.
Lock it
oh,
in.
Wow. That's good. Incredible. All right. So, yeah. So let's.
We'd have
Johnny,
them bow them.
Any
after
ads
that,
from you?
After that start, we'd have them bowing for sure.
So I'm somewhat conflicted now because originally my thought was like a sashimi or something like that. But any of our Minnesota locals, one of my new favorites, and this would probably be my choice, and it relates to seafood and sushi somewhat. Baccio has these ahi tuna crisps where it's like a little crisp. There's a piece of ahi tuna, as you can imagine, avocado, and then like some spices on top of it. And, you know, rather than it just being like a piece of meat or a piece of fish, it's kind of just a little bit more complex than that, and it's one of the best apps I've ever had. So it'd probably be something along those lines.
A5 snow Wagyu, ahi tuna crisps, and assorted sashimi.
I don't know how we're going to make it to the first course.
We're into two, and I'm going to steer us in the direction. We're into mains here.
It's first course, style sides, main course, dessert.
Yeah, so let's start with the red meat. And I'm gonna lob this out there. I don't know if it would parlay from where we were with the finger foods, but I'm gonna just throw out like we go big into like a cowboy ribeye.
Mm, love ribeyes. Right? Big ribeye guy.
Dusted with maybe a chimichurri on the side. Or you do like a compound kind of cowboy butter sliced situation.
I'm a big ribeye guy. My only concern would be if that's the first course, is that too heavy if you're going into the mains, right? Because you have a first course and you kind of have a course.
This is the main red meat.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, we're good.
Oh, first course. Yeah. Salad, of course. Any Caesar. Thoughts on the salad? I think so.
Caesar's just the easy. You can't mess it up as long as you don't taste too much anchovy.
Yeah.
I feel like when we are coming straight from Japan, and then we have to have something that's going to delineate and cut.
I know. You need to.
And then go into the
red
meat.
You got to cross the border.
That
crosses the border.
Blue ocean.
You can't go straight to Caesar. Mm. You're very right.
What about a Italian, like a Greek salad with like the olives and the cheese and some onions.
Is that yeah, like a watermelon, like a watermelon feta?
No, like the balsamic.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, I see you stewing. I know there's something on your mind here.
I'm really trying.
We could transition with like a seaweed salad. I mean, you know, that's obviously we're kind of staying in that region.
That's kind of, I'm just trying to think something. I mean, we're coming straight from Japan. We're going Wagyu and we're going sashimis.
What about a soup?
That's where I was going with in my head.
Yeah. You're right.
What's the soup du jour?
I think you go, Tony, 100% right about this. You can't go salad. You got to go with soup.
I really feel like that because we're going with like such an iconic start from Japan. Mm-hmm. And then we can't just go straight to
Caesar.
Like a Caesar.
Yeah. No. That's fair. No, you're right. You got to parlay. You got to walk through a cup of soup to get to the ribeye. And, you know, when we're going to talk about the soup, I think you have to have it be like ramen-y enough and sort of miso soup enough, but not in that camp. It's got to be kind of, it's got to be a bridge soup.
Agreed.
What if you went to like a lobster bisque?
I don't mind that. We're going a lot of seafood to start with. I don't mind that. My thought is it has to have a little substance to it.
Yeah. Like a clam chowder.
That's,
I like the hand motion that you said that with a lot, so I'm drawn to that.
It convinced you?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not about what you say, it's what you do.
Yeah.
Like just a nice tomato.
Yeah, I know, but
go ahead.
Geez.
No, I think like we're into kind of heavy soups, right? And lobster bisque was heavy, clam chowder was heavy, tomatoes a heavy soup. I think we need a lighter soup.
I agree.
I mean, ultimately, when you're talking about ramen, you're talking about pho, you're talking about kind of those soups, we need to bridge.
We need to cleanse the palate.
We need a medium-bodied soup.
Yeah,
here to bridge us.
Everybody just turned this podcast off.
Let's go back to we'll finish out. So cowboy ribeyes were there. Let's talk about sides in our mains because that might help us with the soup selection.
You have to have a standard potato of some sort. So what kind of potato are we going with?
I mean, look, I like potatoes au gratin. I like baked potatoes. Au gratin might be a little heavy. You might go just baked potato fully loaded.
It provides options.
It does.
It provides options for what you like with a baked potato.
I like my potatoes like in the cast iron where they're kind of like the little triangle shaped potatoes with like some cilantro and some seasonings around it.
Okay.
What's your vegetable you're going with?
Well, I think you got to go, you know, something simple, something earthy.
I'm thinking green beans.
I like green beans. Yeah, I could go. I was thinking asparagus.
Okay. Mm, but that's it. Before the Masters.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
Something always sit
I kind of like the asparagus. I like our steak with some green beans and a nice potato, baked potato that you can doctor up however you like. That's just my personal opinion.
I'm with you.
This might be an outlier, but Brussels sprouts.
Oh,
I'm a big Brussels guy.
Big Brussels sprouts.
Yeah,
guy too.
Brussels sprouts with like, yeah. Okay, so Brussels sprouts
with some bacon and
maybe some honey. Like hot honey. Mm. Yeah.
All right.
Like, and then corn creme brulee on the side.
Okay, I'm into that.
Creme brulee.
Fantastic.
Jeez, we got a lot of sides.
Yeah, we're going deep. All right, let's get to desserts, and then we'll probably ask our listeners what soup should walk us through the door, or salad, or do we go? You know, we're gonna need to figure that out. But when we're at dessert, I'm gonna throw something out here that's just a fan favorite of mine. We go assorted milkshakes.
Ooh.
Mm. Love that.
It's different. It's unique. It's nails.
So
I love that
the
idea.
Now, are there
Oreo, vanilla, chocolate?
So there's like four you can choose from.
Love
that. Sure.
Yeah, and just simple.
I really like that.
You invest in the entrees, you invest in the mains, and everybody leaves with a milkshake.
Could I play devil's advocate and try and find something that I like that could be better? Potentially, but I mean, that's a really good idea. I like the uniqueness. I think it's awesome. I like it.
All right.
I mean, it'd be hard to beat a dessert like that. The only other thing that came to mind would be like some form of sorbet. You know, they always do Georgia peach kind of oriented stuff with the Masters. Some kind of Georgia peach sorbet, I think, would be pretty delicious.
Mine would have been peach cobbler.
Peaches and cream, something like that, right?
It's pretty heavy. So that's why I like the milkshake is that it's smooth. Feels like a drink. I don't know what we're pairing drink. I never see drinks on the Masters menu, so I don't know if it's just kind of like a...
Yeah, they usually pick wines. So, Jordan, Camus. That would be your camp. Okay, so you go Camus. And then, you know, I didn't throw out a non-alcoholic option for my people. So, I think we go with an Athletic Brewing Co. NA beer.
I like
as
it.
An option. Yeah. And what we'll do is we'll put our menu on one of the Masters stationaries, cool, and we'll throw it online and get everybody's feedback. And
hopefully not get sued.
Hopefully not get sued. So.
So before we move on from topic, I would just want to throw something out there, because initially I thought, gosh, you know, this is something really elite clubs do, you know, but Augusta is a pretty elite club, as we all know.
About as elite as
it gets. Do you think anyone could ever get away with making their Masters dinner, you know, say one page that's empty, one line, or you want?
Oh, wow.
Well, that you can do that at Augusta National.
So they could probably do it then, yeah. But
well, I don't think they would do that.
Could. I don't think they would, because of the tradition. I think like your
but it's all about like, hey, the winner from the year before, like,
but
hey,
yeah.
This is your last day as the Masters champion. We're eating on your menu.
My understanding is people do order off the menu in the Bubba Watson year. There were some menu orders,
but
from what I saw,
that being said, right? Like say I won the Masters.
Yeah.
If it was a piece of food and I, as the winner, chose that my guests could have whatever they want, do you think that they would do that? If it was the player's request? I mean,
I think you'd be sort of like bucking the tradition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you need to put out a menu if you're the winner, and that's kind of why we're doing the exercise now. It would be where you're going, Johnny.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's a thing.
And what you'd be trying to do is be unpretentious with this move, but you'd actually be perceived as being really pretentious with the move, right?
I see. That's fair.
And so, I like it. I mean, I like the idea. Menu is just choose your own adventure.
Right. Like have some fun with it. Have what you want.
Go on a journey. Ayahuasca.
You know what, Johnny? Right? I'd like to see it, man. I'd like to see it.
Anyone that wins the Masters and has listened to this, I'd like to give it a shot.
Yeah. The menu for tonight is choose your own.
It's actually, if Vegas had a board on Masters winners that would listen to this episode, who do you think favorite would be?
Of who would actually listen to this episode? Or
episodes,
to this
like
episode?
Past champions.
Mm-hmm. Be a younger guy, yeah.
Nobody.
Really?
I would have just gone with older. Because of the way of discovery for us. It'd be someone on Instagram.
I'm going to go Zach Johnson. Iowa boy.
Yeah, he's Iowa.
Western.
Maybe one of us gets down and plays like golf in Iowa, and he happens
I'm
to
like,
be at the
I'm
club.
I'm like 2 or 3 degrees of separation, because that's the one time I went, because my customer was sponsoring Zach Johnson. Yeah,
I think that's who it is. I think that's who it is. Zach Johnson would listen to this if he was exposed to one of us and we asked him to. I think he would give it a shot.
Seems like that kind of guy.
He does.
Nice guy. Yeah. Nice guy.
All right, so. On to our topic for tonight. That was a fun little sidebar. We're talking about the 2023 golf season. We're talking about goals. We're talking about ambitions. We're talking about everybody's mindset going into the year. Hopefully our listeners can relate. Everybody's got the golf fever here in Minnesota. Had the chance to play the other day, which was a great time. Why don't we start with you, Tony? I know I've been by side with you, brothers all winter on our moves. I have watched you put in the time,
grind
to make some changes to your golf swing.
Yep.
Looks like I don't want to speak for you here, but my observation is you've gotten a little shorter with your backswing, a little more controlled, taking an extra club. We're trying not to kill everything.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about how you're feeling going into the year, what those are, what you want to do.
Yeah. So, as some of you may know that listen, the biggest strength in my game is I can move it a little bit. And it also can become my biggest weakness. And so, my goals for this year are to, on my gin app,
see a
plus at some point, plus 0.1 or something. I've never been to better than a zero. I've never been a zero. So that would be my goal for the year. Ultimate goal. And the way that I need to do that is through more consistency off the tee and not have as many penalty shots and lost
shots
off the tee, or, you know, being able to take advantage of my strength, which is being able to hit the ball a amount of distance, and take advantage of those scoring opportunities to put myself in the best position to score as well as I possibly can. And so, as you described, that's going to happen through trying to be more controlled, take a little extra club, shortening the swing, not, you know, maybe swinging 80% instead of 90, 95, which tends to happen to me on the golf course, trying to stay within myself and swing as in a much old fashion is kind of my plan.
Jordan, how about you?
I love that.
Yeah. I love that for
and
you,
I know,
Tony.
You can get there too.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about it all. It's off the tee.
100%. And I know right. for a I mean, fact.
Everything else is solid. It's just off the tee.
I know for a fact I can get there. I just need to stay 100% committed and not get lost when I'm on the golf course. And
well, the other thing interesting about Tony too is like, I actually think you are there. Like if you played, right, if you always played the blacks or if you always played the tips everywhere we go, which you don't because most of the guys you play with are like, oh, the blues because we can't hit it 350 yards like you do. But if you did, you'd probably not fumble as much, right? Because a lot of the times when you're playing up tees, you hit it so far that you're finding areas that none of us can even touch, right? And so it's almost like you might be there right now if you just played the blacks, which is kind of interesting. It's a little bit different for Tony because he hits the ball so far.
At our home course, I actually score better on average, or I shoot the same score from the blacks as I do.
Naturally, your index would go down.
And
right?
My you're index would go down.
Harder tees.
Yeah, just, you know, the course rating.
Tony, how do you feel about kind of your short game in general? You're playing your wedge play, that kind of part of your game.
It definitely is room for improvement for sure. And that the key that I want to work on for the year is really just dialing a handful of shots that I feel very confident that I can execute on the golf course. And you know, I don't need to have 20 different shots with every club. I need to have a couple that I know that I can be on the golf course and execute. And so that's kind of where my mindset is. It kind of is all encompassed in the, you know, taking a little more club, not trying to do too much, execute the shots that I know I can execute. And I know that my skill set is there that I could and I could be a much better overall player. I just want to navigate those misses and mitigate those and minimize the amount of times that I have those misses, so that I can execute on what the overall game plan is.
Love it.
You're well put.
Hey, Johnny Rue, let's go to you.
Yeah, let's do it. I love that.
Johnny, I've been watching Johnny Rue grind action.
We've been grinding, so
yeah.
It's funny, I'm similar to Tony, but also very different at the same time, in that the biggest problem for me, gosh, for the last 3 years, because I had, you know, bad habits built in when I first started golfing. I'm super right hand strong. I just could not keep it in play off the tee. So I think the biggest change that I made this winter is I worked a ton on my driver. The pro from Winsong, these guys' clubs, and Andy, we spent a ton of time in the simulator this year trying to just figure out, hey, what are we doing with the swing? What can we do with our shaft and our driver setup to improve that, or to, you know, complement that move a little bit more? And I think the biggest change that we made is, you know, trying to take spin and dynamic loft off the driver. So like I said, I was a little bit different, but also similar to Tony. I feel really confident in my short game. Anything, you know, within 170 yards irons, I'm really confident in that, but I just kept getting myself in trouble off the tee. And when you're getting in trouble off the tee, it's nearly impossible to score, right? Unless you're playing a course that's wide open. So I could go out to some place like Wayzata where, you know, there's trees everywhere, but you hit something way right, you're still in play, you can still scramble and make a par, make a bogey, whatever. But then you go out and play a more difficult course like Winsong or somewhere that has some water. Spring Hill is a great example. Go out there and you spin the tee, you're screwed, right? So biggest change that I made was, you know, taking a ton of spin off the driver. Like I said, I was coming over the top, I'm really steep, and I hadn't realized that my main goal was to swing up with my driver. but at the same time, I was still coming down with the club face. So Andy helped me kind of smooth things out, get to a little bit more of an approach from the inside, and then also just neutralize that club face and take a little bit of spin off it. So I've been super stoked. I was just out in California a couple weeks ago playing, and I mean, it changed everything. If you're hitting fairways and you're keeping it in play and you can hit greens or at least get close to the greens and chip up and down, make putts, it's a game changer. So I'm really excited for this year. I've got some new irons and I've been working with, picked up some yardage, and just excited to get back out there and grind. But my goal this year is to have a majority of my rounds be in the 70s compared to the 80s. Like, I'm a 9 handicap. I typically shoot high to mid 80s, or, you know, good rounds are high 70s. So just looking forward to rolling some more putts, hitting more fairways, keeping myself in play, and above all, giving myself an opportunity to score. And take yourself out of a hole, it's hard to get back in it. But really excited, just been doing a lot of testing, reading a lot of data, and having perspective from good players as well to help me out with that. So, yeah, love the game. Yeah.
Johnny just grinds every
makes
day.
Makes a huge.
Just grinds it out.
Grinds. Love it. He went from hitting the driver 250 to 3. Yep. In one session, just figuring out what he was doing with the loft, and you know, you were hitting 4 or 5 down on it.
I mean,
with the face wide open,
any other amateur
and
golfers that
spinning
are listening
it
to this, I mean,
3,500 and
take a look
it,
at the data,
you know, and then we got you hitting up on it a little bit.
I hit this one so bad, I don't know why. Oh, maybe it was a bad swing, whatever. If you can really just try to dissect your game via, you know, video or data that you're taking when you're actually hitting balls, it makes such a difference, because as soon as you learn what you're doing wrong and you can answer that and have somewhere to go from, then it's so much more sense. So, yeah, I would encourage anyone to take a look at the data, take a look at your swing, you know, draw some graphics on top of it, talk to someone who knows what they're doing and knows what they're looking at, and just really dive into it, because it can make a huge difference once you have an understanding of why what's happening is happening. So cheers to Andy for helping me out with that, and really looking forward to building on top of it. Thousand percent.
You'd be a good swing coach, man. You got it dialed in.
I love it
too, and you can tell you're passionate about it.
Yeah, I love it.
Me or you? You want RPS for it?
go, man. I want to hear from you.
So I got, I guess, 3 main things I'm focusing on that I think will lead to my 2 season goals. So these are the 3 things I think can control. That I can control that will lead to where I want to get. So the first and most important I can really control is not changing anything in my bag. I've been a tinkerer, get new stuff all the time. I don't think I've ever played a season where I just haven't changed anything. And it's, you know, when you get used to your clubs, you get used to the feels, you get used to the misses, I think that can go a long ways just from a consistency perspective. So, like, yeah, I'll have a, you know, 4 or 3 iron laying around that I'll switch out for windy days and things like that, but I'm not going to go get, like, a new set of irons or a new, as hard as that's going to be, or, you know, the new driver. Like, I'm not doing that this
Love
year.
Love this goal for you.
Yeah. So,
I had this last year.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't make any changes.
I will say, since we've started recording these episodes in, what, November? Your bag is completely different.
Yeah. So. And I'm not, my goal is, yeah, I took Mizuno irons 1 of 1, and I've got, like, blackout T100s now. So that's the first one. The second one is when I practice, even before rounds, spend more time inside of 100 yards, which includes putting, chipping,
game.
And wedges than I do on anything outside of 100. So longer wedges, irons, and driver. So making sure, like, if I have a half hour before, I'm spending 10 minutes hitting balls and then 20 minutes putting and chipping. I know that, like, my weakness in my game is not being able to get up and down. Like, I can make birdies. I can go low. I can get to pins. It's when I miss the green that I end up making a bogey or a double bogey. And like I told you guys, I had 6 birdies on Saturday and break par. Do that just because I'm too many bogeys or double bogeys and mistakes. The third one, I just want to do this more for the mental part of it, is playing a competitive tournament, one that I have to p- pay to play in. So whether it's like a qualifier, I know they had the, I think they had a US Open qualifier at Winsong last year that I kind of was like, yeah, maybe just play and just like see how those guys approach it. And I know that I'm not going to do, you know, I'm not going to be a pro, but I think it's just, even when you go and play like club championships or these guys that played in, they already have an edge on you because they played competitive golf and it's just a different level for them. And I never played that. I never played high school, I never played college. And so I think if I go do that, it'll just kind of shift my mindset a little bit. I think if I do those three things, my two goals for the season are, I want to be a plus two index. I'm at like plus 0.6 right now. I've been as high as plus eight or as low as plus eight. And then I want a low round of 66. Last year I said break 70, shot 68. I want to shoot 60. I know I can make enough birdies to get there. It's just the bogeys and the doubles. So I think if I do those three things, I can get there, and they're lofty goals, but if you don't set them, then I don't know how you're going
to love it. So I'm not an outcomes guy. I try not to think too much about score or things like that. I mean, I, of course, my mind drifts there. I've never broken 70. We talked about that earlier. I've shot 70 or 71, probably 15 or 20. So it's a mental block. For
sure.
For me. But we're gonna get into the goals here for me. Number one is to stay disciplined and accountable and committed
to my swing changes that I've been working on all winter.
So I want to stay conscientious and diligent about it. Continue to work on those things I've been working on. Stay committed to that. Don't, you know, I have it to kind of get into the season, forget about it, not look at the video for a month or two and act into old habits. So take it to the golf course. We've got it down in the simulator. We're starting to take it to the range. We're starting to take it to the golf course, but I want to see that process through. It might take me all year, but I want to stay committed to it. Even if I play bad golf, I want to stay committed to the swing changes that I'm making. That would be goal number one for me. Number two, is just have a process out on the golf course. So pick a target. I'd like to pick a target on every shot. It's not a realistic goal because it'd be very hard to remember to do that, but stay disciplined to a target. And then my last goal
needs to play one shot.
So my strength of my game is definitely my short game, kind of my wedge play, my chipping, my pitching. I like being around the greens and the creativity of that. I'm kind of a visual person. So if I can like see a shot, it kind of unlocks a creativity in me, and like there's an athleticism that comes out where I just kind of like will create the shot and hit it. And I think that part of the game has been really beneficial. It's been kind of my Achilles heel with the rest of my game, because I'll see shots that just aren't there. And I do it all the time. Like I'm like, I see a bullet like draw here. And it's like, well, I don't like have a draw in the bag, but I see it and it's like, I want to hit it because it's like what my eye sees. And so this is going to be a year. I don't want to lose that part of my game with the short game, but I do want to retrain myself a little bit, and particularly with the driver, with other clubs, to just commit to a shot shape. You know, I'm fading it right now. I want to fade the ball. If I'm drawing it one day, like just play the draw, right? Like commit to a shot, and stay with that shot and don't see things that aren't there on the golf course. So those are my three. I think if I can get those three and do those three, I'm going to be better. And I'm looking to see how it goes. I love your thoughts, guys.
Yeah. I have two comments on that. I love the last topic I mentioned about, you know, you can see a shot, but sometimes that's not the best play. There has to be some discipline, because when you get really creative with shots like that, and you're an optimistic person, so you see, hey, there's a window here, maybe I could hit this. And for all of us, we want to take any chance we can do something special on the golf course, right? So do you feel like you have a level of optimism that needs to be paired with discipline to tell yourself, hey, there's possibility for this, but when you play the odds, and that's always based on
it's
the
just
scenario
that's
too,
all
I'm
it
sure,
is
but.
It's just so like I was playing the other day, and like, you know, I, you know, part of my goals are to eliminate my big right miss. And that's a lot of swing changes I've made, so I probably won't get into that. But I had a block that would go off the planet, and it's hard to play golf with a shot 100 yards right. And so I think the changes I've made has really eliminated that shot for me, which I think in and of itself is going to be a game changer for me. But you know, I'm kidding. Like when I'm hitting it, when I'm missing now, I'm hitting a pull, which is like playable. You know, if I aim it correctly, it's, you know, in the left rough or whatever. Right. When I'm hitting it really good, I'm hitting like an 8 or 10 yard cut and it's really, it's dialed. Right. So I get to a tee box, you know, when we're playing the other day and like I've hit, you know, pull like really good. Like on the first hole, I hit a 300 yard cut right down the middle and I hit a wedge to a foot and made birdie. Right. The second hole is like this dog leg right to left. And, you know, I see like my, it's a dog to left. And so I'm kind of seeing it right to left. Right. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to hit a huge fade just because like I'm fighting this thing I'm seeing, which is right to left, and try to like over, and saying like, I'm going to aim at this target and I'm going to hit an 8 yard cut. I try to do something like stupid. I literally tried to hit a 40 yard fade and I'm like, I'm just going to peel one out there. And I hit it in the water, penalty. I made 7. Right. And then I'm like, all right, I get back and I'm disciplined. And then I pound one on the next hole and I hit it actually, but I was trying to hit a cut. I hit like a 3 yard draw and I hit it 330 yards down the fairway and hit a flip wedge in. Right. And then I get to, and I hit a couple good ones. And then I get to this hole on the back nine and it's like little dog leg, right. There's water in the front and it's kind of like you run out of fairway up the left side. And so you really got to trust the cut. And I'm like, you know what? I see low draw here. Like the wind was a little into us and I back foot a driver and I try to trap a draw and lock it right. You know, not like right miss, but like wipe it right. I hit a push cut and I'm in the trees and I make, you know, I actually hit a ridiculous shot to 4 feet and missed. But the point is, like, it's just having the discipline for me of committing to a shot and not trying to, like, outthink myself on the goal. I don't know if you guys can relate with that, but that's a huge issue that I have.
1,000%. I mean, so many unbelievable players talk about the more you think, the worse things go, right? Like, you don't want to be thinking. But I think you're completely right. We all have the little devil, if you will, on our shoulder telling us there's this really cool shot here, this way out, this or that. And I think that maybe kind of curve, you know, you gotta just test and comes in some situations, right? Of like doing what would be the reasonable thing to do.
There was another hole where the pin was tucked and there's water, right? And I'm cutting it right now. And it's like the pin is 5 paces like off the water. And I'm like, you know what? Like, this is not a pin for me. Like, and kudos to me. Like, I had the discharge. And I aimed at the main. And
I tried to
draw it. And I hit it in the middle of the green. It didn't draw. But, like, that is not what I want to do. That's a zero on the mental scorecard for me.
I think, you know, a challenge for players that are around our caliber, or maybe, you know, up to, like, maybe a 10 or 12 handicap. Like, the challenge is that somebody of that caliber can probably pull off all of those shots in an ideal scenario. But the question is like, can you do it under pressure in the middle of a round? And the answer probably is no. And so that in amateur golf, like when you're out there with your buddies, like you said, Johnny, I mean, a lot of times it's just like, I want to try to hit an amazing shot just because I'm out here to have fun. And like, I didn't come here to lay up or I didn't, you know, those kinds of things that people are saying. It's like just having a good time. And like, yeah, maybe, you know, it is a challenge for me is like trying to do something that, yes, I can do, but is it the right time to try to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I want to say like, for me, it's never the right time to try, you know, and it's tough because I would say this is the part of my game that actually keeps at my level, because in the short game, I see shots that I think like I see, I'm going to cut this chip or I'm going to draw this bunker shot or like whatever. And like that works for me close to the hole. And, I have a way of producing the shot, you know, but it's just really hard to do that with a long club and you're swinging at 110 miles an hour or whatever. Like, so it's separation of church and state a little bit. Right. And just committing to being disciplined. I don't know, Jordan, if you have thoughts on it, but are you a guy that just kind of commits to your shot shape? It's not an issue for you. You're like, I know what I'm hitting. I'm going to peel this fade there. And that's that.
I'm the opposite of you. I can't do it around the greens, but I can, shouldn't say I can do it off the tee, but I'm better at it off the tee or with the irons, but around the greens is where I struggle. It's different.
So, like, do you think you lack creativity around the greens? Is it hard for you to shots?
I'm a data guy, and I have data on all my clubs. Like, I know how far they go. I know if I hit a fade with the 8 or a draw with the 8, like, how far it's, but with chips and pitches, I don't. And so I've been, like what Tony said, I've been kind of like working on numbers with wedges and like, you know, a half 60 degree goes 40 yards or whatever. But then I get around the green and like that, I feel like I have okay hands, but the feel of like how to inside of 6 feet, I don't have the data, right? There's no like, you know, hit a 60 degree 5%, you know? And so that's hard for me to like comprehend and figure out how to do that.
Yeah, that's there. It's, I feel like you have to commit to just learning to hit a couple of shots and knowing what they're going to do. And it's not a data type of thing, really.
That's just
it's
a struggle for me. I'm a data guy.
Yeah. I would say like for you, it's funny how we're different, right? For you guys, it's like having a go-to shot around the greens. It's like, I know if I open the face, you know, and I hit it and I'm going to have a shallow angle of it. Tower, my miss is going to be like a little drop kick to 10 feet and my good one, you know, like you just have a stock shot. I want a stock shot in my long game. And I've never been a player that's like committed to that. My comp would be like, I'm kind of like Spieth in a way. Like when I, as a player, like I can hit it everywhere and like my creativity works and I can hit, you know, crazy rescue shots and I can get it by the hole and I can get up and down and, but I just really want to commit to just like, hey, I'm going to play boring golf. I'm going to commit to my shot. And I think that's the thing that will take me to the next level.
Boring golf results in better scores, which is more fun golf, arguably. That's what Rory said once.
Yeah, I think boring golf is the motto for this year. Hey, quick what's in the bag updates. Anybody want to go? Tony caved in a TSR four wood the other day. shout out Titleist. You can sponsor to make up for it, but no,
I think they're going
to
warranty replace it. So there's good on that. I think we're all playing the TSR 3 drivers.
That says something. Johnny's not.
I'll speak out.
Johnny's playing this.
You know, I'm still playing some Strix on irons that I love the souls of the Strix on irons. That's the whole reason why I play them. Got some Callaway wedges and Bettinardi putter.
Do you like those Callaway wedges?
You know, I had a little gift card for Callaway, and I was trying to figure out what I was going to get with them. And I, one day I just said, you know what, I'm just going to get some wedges just because I needed some new ones and never played them. And surprisingly, I like them a lot, actually.
Cool.
So I'm feeling good about the bag right now.
Johnny?
Let's go. Yeah, big changes. All new irons. If anyone listened to our first episode where we kind of went through the what's in the bag, used to be a big PXG guy, and I don't have anything against PXG. Just the setup that I got was not right for me. It wasn't spec'd for me. I can't remember if they were 125 gram shafts that I had on them. These Project X, they were way too heavy, way too stiff for me, especially, you know, Minnesota, our climate varies so drastically. Switched to some Callaway Apexes with, I think they're 90, 95 gram shafts, and they're just pure butter. I mean, the hottest irons I've ever hit. Andy can attest to this. I probably picked up 20, 30 yards with every club, which is insane to me.
20 to
30
yards?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's.
I used to hit my 8 iron with my PXGs 150 max. Now it's like probably 165, 175.
I think there's speed he's getting from. He's getting speed from the lighter shaft, and I think there's some loft jacking going on there.
Okay.
I've also been in the gym pumping some iron this offseason, so that helps a little bit too. But besides that,
say something,
Hey, thanks, partner, my man. I appreciate that. The only other big thing I changed is new driver, Stealth 2 with the most badass shaft ever. I can't remember what it is because I hit 6 different ones when we were testing them out.
Kali Red, I think we got you in.
Kali Red?
That sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Thing's hot, though. Like so, yeah, new driver, new irons, new me. Life's
same
good.
Same putter, right? Yeah, same.
Same buddy. Putter.
TSR 3 plus with the Ventus Black 7X 357. Got a 3 iron on the way for the windy days.
We talked about that the other day.
Yep. Mizuno wedges, BB0 with the Breakthrough Golf Technology Black Stability Shaft, Betty.
And the T100s.
Oh, did I not say that?
Nope. That's all new.
T100s.
Yeah, I have a full turnover as well from the last time we did this,
I got the T100s, which and I got rare. The blackout ones, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, you guys are all committed. Everybody's committed to not getting new gear, okay?
I know. I played my irons for 3 years.
How long that lasts?
Yeah, for 3 years. So JPX 921 forged, new shaft. We're going Dynamic Gold DG120 X100s. A little heavier shaft, excited about that. Can flight it a little easier with that shaft. I didn't upgrade the wedges. I got new grooves on last year's model wedges, which I play, which are the RTX Zip Cores. Didn't get the sixes because I like last year's a lot, and I'm just like used to that wedge and pretty particular about wedges and grinds and everything like that. TSR, same woods. So, and new putter, which we talked about in the bag, but BB0. We'll see how it goes.
Me and you both. Dude, you were, I got to give you props, man. You were early on the TSR.
Yeah.
And I saw it's the number one driver on tour right now. Most people play at the bag. We're all playing it. A lot of people have converted. Quite frankly, I think it's up there with top. And not a lot of people talk about it, which is really interesting, but it's...
Here's what I would say about that driver. I think that so we've all been pretty much on the Member Guest podcast, and most of the guys I know that like you tend to be a TaylorMade guy at some point. So I was a Sim 2, Stealth, and kind of what I found is like the ones out the middle that I would hit with the TaylorMades would go the furthest of any driver. But in my testing and what I found when I got fitted was, obviously as an amateur, you don't hit it out the middle mm-hmm. every time. The one in my miss is kind of toe side. The toe one was with the Titleist was spinning. The standard deviation between the middle strike and the toe strike was like way better than the Stealth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the heel one wasn't spinning as much as the TaylorMade. So like over across the face was just more forgiving. And overall, I was actually hitting it longer when you account for
It's so hard for people to look at like the guys on tour and be like, oh, he's playing this driver. And I'm like, every single one of those guys hit it in the center of the face.
Yeah.
Most of the time. 98% of the time.
Yeah.
So they're all going to be good and they can do exactly what they want. Yeah. And the drivers at that point, the differences are so small.
Yeah.
When you're like us, even if you're a single digit handicap,
you're going to miss the middle.
You're going to miss the middle a lot. Yeah. You need those misses to be forgiving.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, dude, a toe strike spinning at 2,000 RPM for me versus 1,200 or 1,400 RPM is like literally the difference between like finding the ball and not.
Yeah.
So it's, like, mm-hmm. it's a big difference. And like, I don't know. I'm excited to kind of see it. And just the classic shaping and the simplicity of the Titleist woods is great. So
excited, boys.
Tony caved in the four wood with his speed. So anyway, good episode tonight, guys.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And we have the other episode. I don't know which one I'll end up dropping first, but on the public and private for the year. I imagine a lot of people are ready to get out and play golf at some new courses this year. So
excellent.
Awesome.
It was fun, boys.
All right, see you guys
next time.
Later.